This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa.
Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempstead. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On today's show, we have a guest, Walter. He's a psychotherapist, and he's going to talk to us about some of the work that he's done around marriage counselling and a couple of other things. Walter, welcome to the show.
Well, good to be here. Thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yes, I'm in my 70s,
okay.
Which is a fact, I suppose, these days. That I have to take into account. And I've been a psychotherapist for a long time, and a social worker was the initial training. And I've worked in mental health C ward, as it was in Princess Margaret Hospital in the early days of my career, and then in private practice.
Fantastic. Now, a lot of people know what a psychiatrist is and possibly a psychologist, but a psychotherapist, maybe some people aren't familiar with that. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yes. there's a range of us like that in the profession. Counsellors is probably more of a familiar word. In some ways, it used to be Psychotherapists and Counsellors Association. I think psychotherapists are more focused on the depth of the relationships, or they like to think they are, than counsellors, and probably there's a big overlap between counsellors, but we do not medicate and we do not do the tests to the extent that psychologists do, and we do not medicate like psychiatrists do.
So hopefully that makes sense. It can be a bit confusing what all the different people are and what they do.
Yes. Think counsellor, someone who you go to. I think of it as couple counselling that I do. Couple therapy, you can think we're going a little bit deeper than communication skills sometimes.
Great. So probably not many people know a lot about couples counselling. They might think that it's just teaching people to argue, but there's a bit more to it than that, isn't there? Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Teaching people to stop arguing.
Ah, right. Yes.
And there's a cycle to relationships. They start off wonderfully well, usually, at least for a day or a week or a month, and then difficulties happen because people are different. And those difficulties are not just a mistake. In some ways, people are different, and when they come together, those difficulties, those differences need to be negotiated and worked with. So that conflict, that power struggle, is a seedbed for growth, really.
Absolutely. And I think today we don't like being around people that are different from us. We often try and disassociate from people that are different from us, but that doesn't have to always be the case, does it?
No. In fact, even if you find someone who's very close and compatible, very quickly, there will be differences. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So instead of the Disney movies where everyone lives happily ever after, they probably need to change it to everyone lived with some difficulties and differences and made it work.
Yeah, well, they do make those movies as well, I guess, often with guns in them.
They do. So one of the biggest lessons we hope that you'll take away from couples counselling is don't bring a gun. Is that right?
Oh, look, the first thing that happens in couple counselling in the way I do it, yeah, is that the minute there is 1 ounce of blame, not just guns, but blame,
yes,
I pause the couple and I help them not to blame each other at all for anything.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean to shut them up. It means that to help them say what is hurting.
Yes.
Without blaming the other partner.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people would assume that people naturally have these skills that are to manage conflict, to manage understanding blame would be something that people naturally have. But what have you found over the years?
That people think they have more skills than they do. It is quite an art. You know, somebody might say something like, "You're cornering me." Now that is blame.
Yes.
And I feel cornered. You might even think you're talking about your feelings, but it's a judgment mixed up with a feeling. It means I feel sad, alone, scared, worried when you come so close. And perhaps that's because I was overwhelmed even in childhood by people being, smothering me as a child, and those things will come up again in the relationship. So that's why I think I call it psychotherapy. It does relate to that original family sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes people don't necessarily understand why they do things, but maybe when you unpack it, you discover it could have been something in their childhood or something that happened early
on
in life.
People haven't, we don't sort of explore that deliberately, but it comes up. People go, aha, ah. Now I remember feeling like that when I was at school, you know.
And I suppose a lot of people would say, oh, I don't know if I want to go there. You know, the past is in the past. Can't we just bury it?
That's right. Well, there's no point in bringing it up for its own sake. But it's just more that aha moment where you think, oh, these feelings of being not noticed, not appreciated, not seen for who I am, oh, it's not just you. I've had that in my family growing up, or I've had that at school, or I had it in another relationship. So that sort of takes it broadens the picture, and it doesn't just become something in this relationship, but it does become something you can heal in this relationship, you see?
Yeah. And I suspect one of the reasons that people might avoid couples counselling is they think if it's got this bad, there's nothing we can do about it and we just need to separate.
Yeah. It's amazing, actually, how little I have to teach people sometimes, not even teach, just structure, that people get an enormous amount. Like I had a couple earlier this year who were separating, literally going to lawyers, and thought, well, give it one try with a couple counsellor. And really the main thing I did was, how about you take turns to listen and to talk? And they did that, and I did help them do that a little bit, like coach them how to do that without blaming. But they were good at it. And they came away and said, we've never, ever heard each other like that before in 20 years.
Wow.
Just taking turns. It doesn't take that much. In a safe place, you know, with someone watching, a little bit of coaching. But turns is such a simple idea.
And this is what we teach five-year-olds. You know, when five-year-olds start school, we teach them to share, we teach them to listen to each other. And unfortunately, often as adults, we've lost some of these skills.
And some of these skills, well, we've got them at work, we've got them with colleagues, we've got them with friends, but they break down with our lovers and wives and spouses and partners, because those are the areas where our softness comes forward, where our vulnerabilities come forward. We can keep them contained at work, but if the boss walks away, you think, oh well, to hell with him. But if your partner walks away, is this going to be dangerous? Could this mean the end? I'm going to feel so alone, sad and scared.
Yeah. And I guess one of the other challenges that a lot of people would have with couples counselling is it requires two people, and maybe you might have one person that's really motivated.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can do if the other person really doesn't want to come?
Yeah. There's, it's always worth one person ringing up and talking to a counsellor. The counsellor will probably say, contact the other partner, or even come and see me on your own. a typical thing might be, oh, I've come to see you on my own, my partner won't come. And I say, have you asked them? And then, oh yeah, I've told him so many times that he should come.
Yes.
Ah, I was thinking, make an invitation. And then we might spend the session. I sort of put another chair out, and we do a bit of a role play, and they can step into the shoes of the partner, and I coach them to make an invitation that I think will work. Yeah. And then they do come, both do come. Or I'll even ring them both up and have a talk to each of them, or email them so that in a copy to each of them. There's always one party that's a bit keener than the other.
Yes.
And there's, we're getting a bit technical now, but there's a phase, some couples, I think, are in discernment. I call it in discernment. It just means that one of them or both of them are not sure.
Yes.
And really then the counselling work is to help them get some clarity. And I usually do most of that. I might see them together a little bit, but I often see them separately so that we can get to the point where each of them can say, I want to be with you. I want to be a couple.
Yeah.
And then the couple therapy can start. I think it's a mistake sometimes when couple therapists launch straight in trying to fix the relationship when actually both of them are thinking, I want the hell out of here.
Yep, absolutely.
Get that clear first.
Yeah.
It's all good learning. Look, this is stuff I've learned in the last 10, 15 years, and it's hard won, you know. A lot of training courses and reading videos, podcasts, workshops, conferences. Yeah.
And I mean, we don't teach people these basic skills. You know, we teach trigonometry and differential calculus and Pythagoras' theorem, which most people have never used. Yeah. But, you know, some of these basic life skills that people would use every single day, you've never been taught this.
No, it was apparently a 18-week course for toddlers or for little kids anyway in Israel that taught all these skills quite consciously. I think it would be a very good thing to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we'd like to talk about today is you've got some thoughts around the therapeutic community. Can you tell our listeners what's that about, please?
Well, I saw that there was going to be a government inquiry into mental health and addictions. And I'm very busy and I think, oh, I'll leave it for someone else. But then I listened to a story from one of my supervisees, which was so typical that I'd heard so many times before, that someone's working with a mother and a baby and as a social worker, and they've excluded the father out of the work because they're not seen as a subject for treatment, and nor is the relationship. And often that's for very good reasons, because when the couple get together, it escalates and they fight. And also it's for good reasons in that there may be drug or alcohol use, and there's no community support. And sometimes it gets very complicated. And yet, when I listen to the story of that couple, I think as a couple therapist, let me at them. I would love to work with that couple, but there isn't the money or the infrastructure to support that couple. You can't work in isolation if people haven't got friends and a community around them. So I thought, people need a village. It takes a village to raise a child. People need support when they come out of institutions and when wraparound services stop. So the therapeutic village is, it's not so much a therapeutic community in the sense of like a drug addiction rehab place. I'm thinking of it more as There's the old institutions that we've had for centuries, like Hill Morton Institutional Care, and then more recently, sort of starting in the 80s and the 90s, we've supported people in the community. But I see a gap.
Yeah, and it's certainly one of the reasons that we don't have so many institutions is there was some evidence that said some people were worse after going in there. But I think what you're talking about is quite different from that, isn't it?
It's not institutional care that I'm talking about. Yeah. But when someone has... Look, sometimes people need to go into institutions.
They do, yeah.
And then they need to come out again.
Yes.
But then when they come out again, everything starts to go to custard again.
Yeah.
That's where the therapeutic community could come in. And the therapeutic community that I'm proposing, imagine, it's more like a look, the simple analogy would be, it's like a congregation, but it's focused not on religion, but on well-being and on healing and on group work and couple work and facilitating people's access to agencies when they need it. And it's not something you get kicked out of. You can stay there for a long time because if you're settled, it's not a building. People can live in different houses. Every village would be different. So it is a bit of a difficult idea to get across. But the actual proposal to the government that we made was for them to set up a working party to create a framework so that people could create these villages. So you could imagine, say, a health centre deciding, we've got these people who keep coming revolving door because there's nowhere to go. What about we use that, now that we've got that framework in the system, we can employ some people. We've already got a governing body. Our governing body can set up, employ a social worker to set up something, and we've got a building down the road that we could use for that, and some people could live in that, but mostly it's a centre and there's plenty of places to accommodate people around this neighbourhood.
Sounds like a fantastic idea. Do you know if something like this has been tried overseas and if they've had any success with that?
It's a really good question, and I've Googled and Googled, but I have not come across anything like it. Each time I come close, it's something like a Norwegian prison or something.
Yes.
You know, and I think, no, this is not a prison. I can imagine someone coming out of prison who is motivated, joining a community like this. I can imagine a young family joining it. I can imagine a senior person whose spouse has died joining a community like this and having regular hui's and feeling like they belong.
And I think a lot of people actually really struggle to cope with living by themselves or in very isolated areas.
Yeah, and then when someone says, look, you should go to a group or get a hobby, they go, nah, too hard. But if there was, say if they've just been discharged from some institution and as part of the discharge plan, there was an interview with some of the leaders of a community who said, yes, this is the place for you. This is a good place where you could live, or you could live in your own house. It doesn't matter. It's nearby. We want you to agree to come to regular Friday meetings, and you're interested in pottery, we want you to go to those classes, and you start to meet people and make networks with those people.
Yeah. Can you tell me about loneliness and how much of an impact that's having on so many people?
Yeah, I went to the hearing in Christchurch for this government inquiry into mental health, and it was a shock to me and a learning experience. I was envisaging therapeutic communities that could take over where institutions leave off and where community services are good. You know, there's so many community services available, but they provide services and not community.
Yes.
And institutions, in some ways, provide community, but not services when you get out again.
Yes.
And I heard someone who teaches yoga supported my proposal, and she teaches yoga to women in prison. And she says, the women get on fantastically well. They're doing great while they're in prison. They've got such a bond.
Yes.
And then they leave one at a time and go back into their difficult environments. So the village can take up where only for some people, and it's hard to build communities. I don't see it as a sort of an instant fix. I think we have to evolve something new, a new culture around this. What was your question?
Sorry. That's okay. It was interesting anyway. The question
loneliness.
Was around the question, loneliness, yes.
Yes, loneliness. The hearing was heartbreaking. There were about 200 people in the cardboard cathedral, the traditional cathedral, and my expectations weren't high. I thought it would be bureaucratic, but the quality of listening on the panel was superb, absolutely superb, and I think I was the only professional out of 200 people, and lots of people spoke, and most of it was tears and sadness and heartache of those institutions not working, of families not being able to see their people who've been admitted to an institution. They get excluded from the process. Suicide, people who tried to get into Hill-Morton 5 times and then were found dead somewhere. Their families were there in tears. Oh, I was just so moved. And it made me realize the therapeutic community might not work unless they fix the health system in many other ways as well, you know.
I think there would be a temptation for a lot of people to say, the problem's too big, it's just too overwhelming, we can't do anything about this.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, if each person just does one little thing to make a difference.
Well, you're the optimist of hope, aren't you?
Well, we call this show Lighthouse of Hope for a
reason. I know, I know. And I'm with you. I think I've seen many changes over the years. And unfortunately, they've been for the worst in a way. But I remember when, say, the family court started, I think it's the wrong agency actually, to pay for couple counselling. It should be some sort of welfare agency, not a court. But it was wonderful to be able to see people regularly. And I think hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of couples are together today because of that service. It wasn't that hard.
So it sounds like that's a much-needed service and something that hopefully this government will look at. We're almost out of time, but if people do want to contact you for any reason or about possibly couples therapy, how do they get hold of you?
I think the best thing is to go to the Harakeke website. And
how do you spell that? That might be a bit of a challenge.
Harakeke as in flax.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible speller out loud. A-K-I-K-E, I think.
Something along those lines. Something along those lines.
Yeah, I'm a bit dyslexic. I can write it, but I can't spell it out.
That's okay.
Harakeke Centre.
Yeah.
And then you could see my contact details there. I'm only training people at the moment. So if people want couple therapy, they could contact me. I'll refer them to someone.
Fantastic. Well, Walter, we really appreciate your time. You had some fantastic insights today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa.